Today, I'm welcoming onto Radio Gorgeous the gardening correspondent for the North London Ham and High newspaper. She has written for The Observer, The Guardian, The New Statesman and more. She went to Oxford as an artist and attended the Ruskin School of Drawing and Fine Art. She is Ruth Pavey and she has written and illustrated her book, A Wood of One's Own. Hi, Ruth. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi. It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
So, Ruth, we all fantasise about making the world a better place, but we don't do anything about it. You did buy a patch of land at an auction in Somerset. Can you tell us about it?
Well, it all arose because I wanted to grow trees, and I started off growing trees in London. I live in London. And then you've got nowhere to plant them.
Yeah, how many did you manage to get in London?
Well, I had a little row of trees growing in pots, and then I had a walnut which was lovely, and I put it I have an allotment in Highgate, and you get into trouble if you put trees on allotments because
They say that you're not using it as an allotment.
Exactly. Yeah, and yeah. Also trees are there for a long time, and it's not fair if somebody else is going to take your plot after you.
Yeah, because they have to uproot it or something.
So anyway, that was what made me think, if you want to grow trees, you've got to have your own bit of land. And it took me ages to do anything about this.
It was a seed in your mind.
It was a seed in my mind. But I looked at land fairly near to London. It was too expensive. And it wasn't till much, much later, about 20 years ago, I had occasion to be going up and down to Somerset a lot, just sort of something to do with the family, because my family comes from Somerset. And I was going a different way from any that I'd gone before. I hadn't ever gone across the Somerset levels, and I thought they were beautiful, so mysterious. And also, I thought they didn't look very rich. And, because I had tried in places like Wiltshire, but pony paddocks there are so sought after. And that's what reignited the thought in my mind that it would be fantastic to have a small bit of land to grow trees. And so I stopped off in a little town called Langport and went to the land agents. And I won't say it was simple, but it was a whole lot simpler than getting something nearer to London. And that's how I came to get this 4-acre patch.
So 4 acres, Somerset levels. The only time I've ever heard about the Somerset levels is on the news because they flood. Is this true? And is your patch okay?
It is absolutely true. But my patch is on an escarpment.
What does that mean?
A little ridge.
Okay, great.
And so that was, that was luck. But it does. When I got it, we hadn't had those great big floods in 2014, but when they did happen, I thought, I'm actually rather lucky to be a few. Not huge high ridge, but it is on a ridge.
Fantastic. So what state was it in? Were there any trees on it? And just tell me about it.
It was in a state, as you might say. It was completely impenetrable because, as I later found out, it had been an orchard, at least the lower section of it. The higher section was more coppiced hazel and that sort of thing. But the old man who'd owned it, who I did go to see after I became its owner, told me that there'd been no price for the apples since the 1950s. And he was running a tiny farm. And as you probably know, the tinier, the more work. Mm-hmm. And running a small, I think he had 13 acres, he must have worked from dawn to dusk. And so if there was no price for the apples, it really wasn't worth maintaining the orchard. And that's what happened. He gradually let it go. And it was mainly brambles, I think, that had first grown all over the trees, because they sort of drape themselves all over and then fall down the other side and start growing again. But in between whiles, lots and lots of elder had grown. There had been some plum trees in the orchard, and they'd grown out from their rootstock. And so there were great patches of tall, spindly trees. I didn't know what they were, but they turned out to be plum trees. And then further up, the hazels had grown into great big branching, whooshing up trees instead of being coppiced. And in fact, they were the only part that I could walk in to begin with, because they created so much shade that the brambles didn't spread underneath. So I looked at it, you know, clambering about, and I realised actually you couldn't do it all by hand. I was hoping to do it by hand.
Yeah,
but you
fantasy,
actually couldn't.
Natural.
Yeah, just couldn't, at least I couldn't. Mm. And luckily, in a way, my first job after I'd got it at the auction was made clear to me because the auctioneer had said, anyone who buys this, it was sold as scrub woodland, anyone who buys it must be aware that the willows along the bottom ditch are falling over onto the orchard below, which belongs to somebody else, and they want you to know that it's blocking the ditch and they need to be removed.
So you knew you had some work to do immediately.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I found that really helpful, actually.
Yes,
because,
starting place.
You know, it's weird, actually, arriving in a complete wilderness and having... There's no building on it. There's no... You don't... It took me a while to find
my
bearings, way.
Yeah.
And to be told, you need to get those willows done, was really helpful. And the... So soon after I'd got it at auction, which was April 1999, I went to see the owner of the orchard below, who turned out to be the sweetest person. So
was that growing? Were they growing apples then, if they're an orchard?
Yes, yes.
Commercially?
Mildly commercially, I think you could say. Mm-hmm. They're cider apples. Mm. And... actually, in 1999 was before all these small cider-making businesses have started up again, you know, craft cider. But they were the remnants of the old makers of cider, who were mainly farmers, were still just about. And a local person would come and collect the apples from them.
Lovely.
Yeah. And so...
Did he give you some advice about how to do it?
The apples?
No, the actual clearing.
The clearing. Mm. He told me about a local contractor.
Thank God for that.
Because there was no... Mm. I mean, my brother and I did try the first summer. We did hire a chainsaw. But, you know, willows are really sappy. And what we discovered was you need a... I mean, if you try... doing them by hand with a handsaw, you get stuck in no time because they're so wet. At least the saw gets stuck. And the same seemed to happen with the chainsaw. I mean, you seem to need a really powerful one.
So what did the contractors use then?
I wasn't there, but I think I imagine they had big chainsaws. You know, they were sort of set up for this sort of thing and not afraid of it.
Yes, exactly. What am I doing?
I mean, you know, by the time you hire a chainsaw and you put all that gear on, it's time to go home, really, by the time you've revved yourself up.
So where did you stay when you were there?
To begin with, I would stay in bed and breakfast. There's actually a caravan site at the top of the ridge and you can camp there. And I did camp one night. And I'd forgotten about camping. I was so cold.
Oh, no. What time of year was it?
May.
Oh, yeah. Well, England in May can be...
You know, I thought...
Yeah. You fantasised again that it would be blissful.
Well, I didn't think it through, really. Mm. And there's a kennel up on the ridge, so the dogs barked all night.
Oh,
it wasn't restful, really.
No.
So, a while later... still in the first year I had it, Ted, this is the owner of the lower orchard, said to me that I could, perhaps I'd like his roll-along. I didn't know what he was talking about, but it turned out that a roll-along is a builder's mobile accommodation, a little, you know, cuboid of metal on wheels.
It sounds sweet.
It is sweet.
Yeah.
It is sweet.
It's like a sort of metal shepherd's hut.
It's absolutely... It's like an unposh version.
Yeah, which is cooler, actually.
of a shepherd's hut. It was cooler.
Attracted the cold.
I slept there for maybe, I mean, on and off, not for weeks on end, maybe only a year or so.
Wow.
It feels much longer, but...
I'm impressed.
It was lovely, but it was freezing, and even in summer. And, you know, there's no running water, no light. It was kind of...
Well, you were living like a shepherd. So no light. No, what did you? What? So a sleeping bag and a candle. Did you burn? Did you make a fire? What did
when I say no light, it was equipped with gas lanterns actually, which I did learn how to use. But I don't know if you've ever seen gas light. It's not pretty. It's sort of very white.
Yeah.
I didn't really like it, so I did move more on to candles, which is such a lovely light. There was a heater in the roll along, but it didn't work, and I couldn't get the part that was needed. And one of the gas places I went to said, "You'll never get someone to come up to a wood to look at it anyway. He'll condemn the lot if he does." So I thought, okay. And I've got one of those movable gas heaters, which has a cylinder tucked in the back. But actually, it was far too powerful. You know, it's only a tiny little place. So one way and another, I did think, I hadn't thought about being a second homeowner, but I think...
That wasn't the original plan.
No, it wasn't. But to make it a doable thing, because actually lots of tree planting you do is in the winter. And so I've got a house in London, and I was able to raise a mortgage on it easily. I mean, the chap who came round said, "Well, which room do you want to mortgage?"
Fabulous. Because you bought at the right time, that generation.
And, I mean, it's not a grand house, but nevertheless.
No, but compared to what you can get in...
And also compared to the little place that I found eventually in Langport, was very, very cheap because it was a ruin and because it was on the main road.
So you had another challenge there, didn't you?
Yes. That hadn't been my intention, actually. But anyway, it all got done.
Okay, so you bought the wood, you started clearing it. What did you discover when you started clearing it? And have you kept any of the trees?
Yeah, I discovered quite a few of the old apple trees that I discovered. I think it's a continuation, actually, of the same orchard, the one that belongs to Ted below the willows and further up. I think they were still...
They were at one
point the same.
Mm. And some of those trees are still alive?
Just.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, it's nearly 20 years since I've been there. Mm. And in that time, you know, I thought, oh, marvellous, I'll restore these trees, by... cutting out all the brambles and all the rest of it. But actually, one or two of them, as soon as they were released from their absolute embrace of brambles, they died.
It was a shock, wasn't it?
I think it was, And I thought...
They were cosy, weren't they?
Well, they were just hanging on.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as I took away all this sort of cover, it was too much for them.
Stressful.
I mean, one or two I've propped... when I say I, the nice man who's the contractor propped them for me.
What do you use? Because I've got a place in Italy and they've got giant olive trees there. They're the biggest ones in Italy. They're these very large ones that were brought over from Morocco 2,000 years ago.
Oh, my.
And they use breeze box to keep them up.
Do they?
Yeah. What do you use where you are?
Well, the first one, actually my favourite tree, and it's a shame because it is no more... there's quite a lot of elm up there. Elm grows in the hedgerow and it doesn't get Dutch elm disease until it gets bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the outgrown from the hedgerow. And we used a prop made of elm for my favourite one, you know, with just a sort of V at the top.
Mm.
But actually that got woodworm and collapsed itself. So that darling tree went.
How many have you got survivors? How many survivors?
I should think there is probably about eight.
Okay. So tell me about what you've created. Have you recreated an orchard and, you know, and what have you done with the top bit?
Well, because I hadn't reckoned on being a fruit grower, but because it was an orchard, And, you know, orchards have been lost.
Yes, they're dying every year.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, yeah. so much as, you know, something like 85% of our orchards since the Second World War have been grubbed up and built on and all the rest of it. I thought, well, I can't not do the apple trees. And so I've learnt to graft. I've been grafting from the ones that haven't yet died. When I can... It turns out to be more complicated than you think.
Mm. You know, is it something to do with taking it off the root?
You know, well, I haven't... Mm. No, I think not, because they tend to be... Apple tree, or fruit trees in general, tend to be grown on a rootstock.
Yes.
And then grafted. So you graft on the desired one.
Oh, I see. So you literally... You tie it on, so it grows onto
and,
it.
And the rationale behind that is that you can get the rootstocks to be very... how you do this, I do not know. Mm. Very variable. Some will grow to a dwarf tree. Some will grow to a middle-sized tree. Some will grow to what's called a standard, which is the big old trees that people don't tend to grow anymore. And what you do is your rootstock comes up in a thin trunk, and then you look... On your desired tree, you look for a lovely, slim, young shoot, which will be about the same, will fit nicely. Although I've later learned that isn't that essential. But my trees weren't growing lovely, young shoots.
They were knobbly.
Yes. And somebody, the chap who showed me how to graft said, well, you've got to prune them. To encourage them to put out new shoots. And that's all very well. They're so high, some of these. I can't get to the bits that... So actually, when they fell over, it was sometimes quite helpful because they don't necessarily die when they fall over.
I don't believe it.
Sometimes they do, but sometimes they carry on. Mm. For a while, anyway. And once they've done that, it seems to sort of... I don't know if this is true everywhere, but on my land, they seem to think, oh, so we'd better tend up a few more shoots now that we've fallen over.
I suppose, yeah, it's trying to look for somewhere to root or shoot. Or,
yeah. And they do put down extra root. I don't know if the old ones do. A young one I planted that fell over, I'm ashamed to say, put down its own new roots. So I have been able to... They're called scions, rather nicely.
What, is that the make of the apple?
No, the new shoot is called a scion, like, you know, a scion of the root of Jesse and all that sort of stuff.
Yes, a biblical name.
Yes, yeah. And you collect them in the winter, and then when everything's starting to grow, that's... Well, so I've been told. That's when you do the graft.
So do you break it off and then
root it? You cut it. Yeah. And in the winter you just have to put it somewhere cold and dark, not indoors, but you know, you don't want you jam it in the ground, what's called heeling in, but you don't want it to be a sunny place because you don't want the buds on that scion to start opening because they'll die. You know, buds will open and then without roots that will die. Okay. You don't want them opening until you've done the graft where they're married up with the the rootstock, which has got its roots in the ground anyway. Mm-hmm. And then you hope that that will work. You bind it round. And if the buds open then, it grows.
And you have succeeded.
Yes, I have.
That's brilliant.
They're slightly wonky looking, some of them. But
now, I'd like to know what sort of apples they are, because I really like English, you know, apples, and I can't stand the ones in supermarkets now. You know, I love Cox's, russets. Downstairs I've got some medlars I'm going to eat. Tell me about what you've got.
Well, the ones that I've done from the old ones, I don't necessarily know because it hasn't been easy to get them identified. There's one that seems, you know, I've taken them to apple shows and things like that.
Oh, you've got really into it, Ruth.
Oh, yes. And what I've learned at apple shows is that nobody says the same thing.
Oh, you know, gosh. You know, so
all the experts, I mean, they're all very thoughtful. But I think it's hard. I think it's hard to identify them. And as one of them said to me, you know, they could be just seedlings. Because that's another thing about fruit. on the whole, I mean, you know, they'll seed like mad. On the whole, they'll come up with things that aren't much good. But then,
so an apple pip could grow a tree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it might not be any good. You know, it might be terribly given to mildew and all the rest of it. So Bramley's seedling was, you know, a good chance. But that doesn't mean that all of them will come out good.
Yeah.
But the ones that I think I know I've got are the Reverend W. Wilkes, R. Wilkes, W. Wilkes, somebody Wilkes. He was apparently a sort of stalwart of the Royal Horticultural Society at, I don't know, the turn of the 18s to the 19s. One called Warner's King, which is absolutely lovely. When they cook, they tend to be very fluffy.
So are these cookers?
I don't know. But yeah. I cook them.
Okay.
I mean, the woman who knew most who I sent some things to, she said, it looks to me like you've got a typical Somerset farm orchard which has cider, cooking and eating.
Fabulous. Just what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And there's a fabulous one, to pick up your word, right at the beginning of the land, which I call the first tree because it's the sort of first old one you come to. And that's, they have huge fruit.
Has it got red on it? Or
no,
just,
it's very green.
Mm-hmm.
And that, what in the in the jargon I gather is called, it falls nicely, which doesn't mean it falls off the tree. It means when you're cooking it, it goes to a fluff.
Lovely.
And so, then I've bought in some of your russets.
Oh, great.
And some of the Rennets or Lyons Rennet. Lots of them have got French names. The French must have been terrific in the 19th century at breeding.
That's, I suppose, yeah, Normandy we're talking about.
I don't
about.
Mean themselves yeah. breeding. Yeah. I mean breeding.
Yeah. No, because I went to Normandy this summer and, you know, and it's the only non-wine area and it is the cider place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anything they do well, generally,
yes.
don't they?
And also, you know, loads of roses. And you don't really hear so much about the nursery trade in France now, but I think it must have been terrific.
Yeah, now it's all Holland, isn't it?
What else have I got? I've got a nice old English one called Keswick Codlin. And there's one called London Pippin, which I got in honour of London.
Great. Yeah.
Which apparently is an East Anglian apple that was brought down on barges to feed London.
Lovely. That's so lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the names.
So how many fruit trees do you have now?
About 40, I think.
Gosh.
I mean, I put plums in as well. And
I love plums.
Pears.
Oh, and pears. What pears have you put in?
Again, they seem to have French... No, there's one called Clap's Favourite, which certainly doesn't sound French. There's one called the Durandeau, as in the Durandeau, the Durandeau. There's one called Nouveau Poitou. And then I like red ones. Mm. I love the red skin on some pears. There's one called, actually it sounds English, Glow Red William or something.
So Ruth, you've got your orchard. It's been, I mean, you've owned the land for 18 years. I don't know how long you've had these. What are you harvesting and what are you doing with them?
Oh, I get them made into apple juice.
Ah.
Because that seems the easiest thing.
And are you giving them to somebody else to make them into apple juice?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard work. And, you know, all those lovely community orchards that have those hand presses, my goodness, they're hard work. And they don't get anything like as much juice out as a commercial one does.
Mm-hmm.
I take it to a cider maker called Hex in Street in Somerset. And
and do they buy them off you?
No, they're very sweet.
They give you bottles?
You just go in.
Mm.
They put it into their boxes so that they know how many boxes, because I haven't got the proper boxes, you know, mine could be any old shape. And they say, okay, well, the juice is running well this year, or the juice isn't running so well this year. That will probably be about 75 bottles. And they provide the bottles. They pasteurise it. They put something called, I think it's citric acid, to stop it discolouring.
Yeah.
And then you just go and pick them up, and you pay them a pound and something a bottle, I think.
Fabulous.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So have you got are you labelling them yourself?
No, I haven't bothered to label. Yeah. I have a select clientele of friends.
And do they, is it all your apples in together, or are you separating them?
No, they're all in together. Mm. And so each year may taste slightly different.
Fabulous.
But what is lovely is it's not sweet.
Okay, and is that what we're used to tasting, sweet?
Yeah. And it's not too sour either. It's lovely, actually.
Fantastic.
But I don't just do the fruit. I mean, you know, I did want to grow bigger trees.
Yes. So what have you grown? What's up there and how many?
Well, on the opposite ridge, there are cedars that were planted by William Pitt when he had an estate there. Mm. So I did some cedars on my side, sort of as a wave. I've got two cedars of Lebanon. And and rather, it's lovely about planting trees. You know, you think, oh, God, I've got to live to 400 to see this. But actually, they grow like mad to begin with. Because I now understand it's a tree's business to get up.
Yeah.
Before 1,000 things eat it, you know. I mean, it's a miracle, really, there are any trees at all, the amount of eating the rabbits and the deer and everything do. So I put some other conifers up there. I love conifers, but I'm not very knowledgeable about them. Them I grew from seeds, so I'm not really sure what they are. I've put in silver birch, because, again, I love silver birch. Beech is not doing quite so well up there. I think it'd be all right at the top of the ridge. My land doesn't go up to the top. The top of the ridge, I think, has got more sort of limestone-y.
Yes, that's what it's happier on.
Yeah, but mine is quite heavy clay. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of ash there, which, pray heaven, doesn't get diseased, but it could do. I've put in some oak. Walnuts I've put in, which the squirrels are destroying.
Yes, I want to ask about wildlife. So what is there? You've mentioned deer, squirrels and rabbits. Anything else?
Badger.
Oh, wow. Are they a pest for you?
No, they're lovely. No. Their set isn't on my bit, a bit further up.
But they come in, do they?
I see them very occasionally. Mm. And they don't do any harm. And you get so used to seeing them dead beside the road, you know, looking rather sort of tawny and bloated. When you see a live badger, they're so beautiful, you know, white down the middle, and
they're big.
Well, actually, the ones I've seen haven't been big, but yeah, they can be.
They're as big as a medium-sized dog.
Yeah, you know? We've got up there stoats. I think I've seen stoats. I have to say, I think there's less than there used to be.
What, because you've taken the brambles down?
I don't know whether it's me.
Or it's just 2017.
Yeah. But I don't think... I mean, I have left a lot of bramble and a lot of thicket, so I don't think...
And is that on purpose to keep wildlife?
Yeah.
Is that what they say then? Or keep wildlife, keep some messy parts?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and when you cut down a tree, don't take it away and things like that.
All that stuff, yeah. I mean, I don't get bitten in the summer so much now as I did when I was first there. And I think it's just our fewer insects. And that's what people are saying, isn't it? There's this huge decrease.
Yeah.
Which is really worrying,
It is.
Although it's nice not being bitten.
But
there's lots of birds there.
Can you just tell us how to plant a normal tree? So say if I had a plot of land and I wanted to plant a tree, I'm talking about a conifer, you know, like an oak or something, you know, how would I go about it?
Well, don't have land like mine for a start, because mine's incredibly, it hasn't got much topsoil and it's very, very hard going. But if you're thinking of sort of garden soil.
Yes.
Yeah.
So well, just the listeners, so they kind of have an idea. Also, is the time of year now then, autumn?
Yes, it's meant to be what's called the dormant period, which is getting shorter with climate change.
So you, is that
I mean, if we look out there now, we can still see leaves,
yes,
and it's December.
Yes,
you know, whereas 20 years ago, they'd have been gone.
So dormant period's probably December till
February,
end of February.
March. Yeah. March is pushing it.
Yeah, okay.
You dig a hole.
Mm.
All the books tell you to dig a hole bigger than you want. But I don't, because it's such hard work.
Yeah. I always think that's because they want you to put
stuff in
round it, and it will drain more easily.
Yeah, and also to they want you to. There are two schools of thought on this, actually. You know, that you should put in some good soil and something delicious. Mm. But there's a nursery that I go to near Wellington in Somerset, and they're very sort of workaday. And when I've said about, you know, what should I be putting into the planting hole? Oh, don't cosset them, they say. Just bung them in. You know, they'll find their way. They've got to live rough. Just get on with it.
And I love that.
Yeah, I know, it's great, isn't it?
It's a real relief.
Yes, exactly. Because, I mean, it is true to say that a lot of our gardening advice is incredibly detailed.
Yes, and complicated. Yeah. And, you know, I went and bought some lime the other day, and I've got ash, and I've got all sorts of things, and I'm mixing them up, and I'm terrified I'm going to kill the plant from what I'm doing, you know.
Well, according to the nursery in Wellington, don't bother.
Yeah.
And there's I don't know if you're aware, there's a wonderful Swedish writer whose name I'm not going to remember, except I think Bodil comes into it. Possibly. She wrote a book about gardening in Finisterre, because she was living there. And she didn't know anything about gardening, and she had very clear views of what she wanted. And so she read some French gardening advice, a bit of Swedish, and she read some English. And when she came to read the English, she said, "It's preposterous. I'm not going to do all that."
Great. Yeah. Great. So we're quite poncy then as gardeners.
Well, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, trees, plants in general, do want to grow.
Yes, and they are designed for it. But and also this thing about, you know, putting the seed underneath. I mean, seeds obviously just land on top in nature, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of waste in nature. And obviously, I don't want to criticise too much the good advice, because the good advice is aimed at getting the best possible results. But, you know, because I'm working on quite a big scale.
So you're still planting now, Ruth?
Yes, I am, actually.
Well, Is it a constant?
I ought to be. Yeah. I've got various things in pots, and people give you things, you know.
Yes, very kind.
Lovely and kind.
It's more work.
Yes. I mean, I was up there last week, and the weather wasn't bad. In fact, it was rather lovely days. But I did have a bad cold, and I just thought, actually, I'm not going to, you know. I think you do have to be a bit nice to yourself sometimes.
Yeah, fantastic. So what do you do with your wood now, and how do you enjoy your wood?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I go there quite a lot. And because I've written this book about it, we had a launch. We had a London launch, but we also had a Somerset launch, and that was in the wood.
And fabulous. Party in the wood.
Yes, yeah. It was lovely, actually. I mean, it was in October, so it wasn't, you know, we had a big bonfire because you didn't know would it be fine or not, which luckily it was. So I do really enjoy having other people there.
And is it visually, is the grass down? Is it that manicured, or is it still quite wild?
Well, my for a long time, the contractor used to mow it. And it was, you know.
So grass did grow. Did it just grow without you even planning? It just seeded.
It just came of its own. One bit we did seed, but one bit just came of its own accord. But then so do all the weeds as well, all the coarse weeds. He used to mow it, and then he got fed up because a lot of rabbit holes, and the mower would go down the rabbit hole, and you know, not good for the mower, and even his son, poor soul, hurt his ankle down the rabbit hole.
Oh, no.
And so, you know, he was really getting to think that this wasn't worth it. And so I thought, okay, I reverted to an idea I'd had before, which was to try to invite sheep in.
Oh, lovely.
There's a very nice organic farm with a farm shop quite nearby. And I knew that they had their sheep up on the ridge, so I thought they wouldn't mind bringing them. And when I first thought of it, I hadn't got enough money to pay for the fencing. But by the time I'd finished paying the mortgage for the cottage, blah, 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 I thought, OK, the second time, now that the contractor doesn't seem really want to carry on, I would.
Yeah, it's an investment. Instead of paying him, you're getting the fence done.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm. But it, mm. the idea was, at least once you've done it, you've done it.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Oh, no.
Because we chose to put in electric fencing.
Yeah.
And Rob, the farmer, he said that, actually, you know, he said, it's such a beautiful place, you don't want to spoil it, which I thought was very sensitive of him. And he said, if you put in stock fencing, which is those rectangular grid sort of wire, thing, A, you've got to have it, apparently it's much more complicated to put it in because it's got to have tensile strength or something or other. Which is not so easy if it's a wobbly line on a uneven surface and all the rest of it. And he said, also the sun glints on it. You'll never stop seeing it, whereas the lines of electric fencing...
Oh, the lines
fencing,
of electric are you don't really subtle. See, in fact, they're a bit dangerously subtle, actually.
So I had that done. What I hadn't realised was that you have to maintain it because the nettles and the grass grow up.
And then it...
The brambles grow down and then...
Then they can escape.
Well, the electric won't work,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So actually, I'd spend an awful lot of time tending the fence.
So do you have some sheep?
Well, Rob the farmer's meant to put his sheep in.
Yeah.
They were meant to come in mid-September.
Mm.
I'm still hoping.
Because they'll nibble it, the grass.
No, that's great. I mean, in theory, it's a great idea.
And then also, I suppose, they fertilise as well.
Yeah.
And have you had them in then?
Yes. Mm. and they're great.
Yeah, yeah.
But it would be better if I owned the sheep, but then I can't own the sheep. Because I'm not there, and you can't have stock if you're not.
But also, it's a great idea, is that you've got it, you're sharing, come here, you know, you're with the community.
But the truth of the matter is, you know, when farmers had loads of stock, they wanted grass. Now, the boot's on the other foot. Those of us who've grass are longing for the farmers to put their cows, not so much cow, I'm not so much longing for cows, although I do like them.
Cows are so, make such a mess.
Well, they've got
so,
they're heavy. They're heavy.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And they might eat the trees. And
well, they do. They like an apple, I discovered. Yeah. But I love having the animals there, but it's just that you've got to arrange it with somebody else.
Yeah, it's another job, isn't it?
You know, and he's busy,
mm.
and he's doing it as a favour, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And then lastly, how long does it take you to walk round it, would you say?
Oh, when I first arrive, any time I was just wander around, I suppose it takes about half an hour or so. I mean, it's not huge. 4 acres isn't huge.
Lovely. So lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for coming onto Radio Gorgeous. A Wood of One's Own by Ruth Pavey is published by Duckworth.
Thank you. Yes, I should have said more about the book, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
It's a nice book.
Yeah. You'll find out many more stories about the people, but we know about the wood now. Now we've got to read about what happens around it and your journey. So you'll always find interesting women on radiogorgeous.com.